Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we're here to do Chapter 11, Quidditch.
Yay.
Yep. I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm a little sick, and so my voice sounds a little weird today, although according to Joe, it's not quite as bad as it was the past few days.
That's why we waited.
Yep, that's exactly why we waited, because we're on a schedule and we're posting these as we do them.
Absolutely. We are not months behind, like a year behind.
Over a year. I think our last episode was August of 2017.
But by the time you're hearing this episode, you'll have listened to a couple episodes that are going out regularly.
Yes, that's true. Which also means that we won't really be able to read emails, but we weren't also really getting emails. So problem solved. We're going to start with the chapter summary, as always, by Joe. And
I thought we took turns.
Well, we always start with the chapter summary, but it's not always done with you.
Okay, you phrased that weird.
Okay, the chapter summary will be done with Joe, as we always open the episode with a chapter summary. And because it's done by Joe, obviously it'll be succinct and concise and get straight to the point. So what happens in this chapter, Joe?
Well, I decided, because you love how detailed I usually am, if I just didn't write one down, it would have to be shorter.
Oh, God.
So it starts off with Harry talking about how he's been practicing with Oliver Wood in secret.
You forgot to specify Cassie's boyfriend, Oliver Wood.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Harry talking about how he's been practicing with Cassie's boyfriend, Oliver Wood.
Thank you.
Correct. In secret, and that all the secret practice is part of why he's happy to now be friends with Hermione, because she's helping him with his homework. Mm-hmm. They go to the game eventually, and
they play Quidditch.
They play Quidditch, yeah. And that's the whole chapter, and then it's over. No. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, pretty much. That is what happens.
Yeah, but there's more important things.
I know, but we'll get into that in more detail.
That's all you want me to say?
That no, seems I mean, like you can add enough. More. What else do you have to add?
Well, I would say that Lee Jordan is the announcer, and him and Professor McGonagall are a great pair. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of just watching the game happen. You know what I mean. We're reading about the game from Lee Jordan's perspective for the most part.
Yeah, I have something to say about that later when we talk about the actual details of the chapter.
Okay. And then Harry starts getting shook off his broom.
Yes.
So Hermione goes shaken. Is that what you're?
I'm actually not sure. He was shook off his broom. Harry starts getting shaken.
You're the English teacher.
I know. So. I have 2 degrees. Go on. I'm sorry.
So Hermione goes and...
this is all way too much detail. It's fine.
I don't think so.
Harry's broom is shaking around. The end. It gets resolved the end. Within the chapter. We're doing the chapter summary just to remind people of what chapter we're talking about. Not to...
All right. Let's start from the beginning.
Oh,
then.
Lord. No, we don't need to.
Yeah. We're just going to go...
Okay.
So in Quidditch, they play Quidditch.
Yeah.
Harry has secret practices with Cassie's boyfriend, Oliver Wood. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for respecting our relationship.
And he plays Quidditch.
Okay. All right. Great.
Is this the shorter version that you're happy with?
I'm not happy with any of them. My boyfriend, Oliver Wood joke gets funnier as I get older?
I don't think it started funny.
Okay.
And that's not even like I'm your actual boyfriend and it's weird. That's just... sounds sad.
Let's talk about the beginning of the chapter. It opens in November, which is the month that we're recording this, which is great. So Rowling kind of opens the chapter by describing how cold it is, to kind of introduce that transition of time, which is something I feel like we see the chapters open up a lot with. Mm-hmm. And it, for me, it's always very tied to the weather in Harry Potter. But you know, so she talks about it's cold and everything. And then she writes that Hagrid can be seen outside defrosting broomsticks. which I had some questions about.
I think he's shooting fire out of his wand at the broomsticks.
Hagrid doesn't have a wand.
I think he's shooting fire out of his umbrella at broomsticks.
When he did that in a previous chapter, he asked Harry not to say anything. So I feel like he would not be doing that on school grounds in full view of all of the students.
Fine. He has an actual flamethrower.
Okay. That's much better. Thank you. Is it necessary to defrost broomsticks?
Like, at the very least, you got to like bang the snow off of them.
I don't think it's snowing yet, though. First of all, why is a broomstick freezing? And will that interfere with the magical properties of the broomstick if it is frozen?
Well, I would say if the broomsticks are outside getting frost on them, then they're just getting dew on them like the grass is.
Okay, so,
maybe they don't work too well if their bristles are stuck together. I don't know.
Okay, well, I did a little more research.
Okay.
According to the Harry Potter lexicon, there is a broom shed where presumably all the students keep their broomsticks, which raises a lot of questions about theft and ownership. But why would they freeze in the broom shed?
It's not heated.
Okay, but they have magic.
So?
Okay, all right.
Do you need to magic everything?
I feel like to prevent Hagrid from having to do manual labor, they could just magic the broom shed.
I mean, he's the groundskeeper. It's his job.
I understand that, but like, I don't know. Just the politics of Hagrid's job just disturb me sometimes because it seems like all of the things that he is doing can be solved with magic.
Well, how do you feel about Filch?
That's even worse, which we'll talk about Filch in this chapter. We can move on from the broomsticks. It's just it was a weird detail. Definitely not on the level of the dolphin boots, but it's getting there. So moving on. Rowling also kind of raises the stakes for the impending Quidditch match, which is like the titular thing, the big thing happening in this chapter. So she raises the stakes by saying that if Gryffindor won, they would move up into second place in the house championship. And I'm genuinely not trying to nitpick here at the beginning of the chapter because I think this is a good chapter. But doesn't that depend on, maybe you can clarify this because I'm not totally clear. The points that they score in the Quidditch match, do those automatically get transferred in to the House Cup? You know, like if you earn 50 points in the Quidditch match, does your house get 50 points?
Are you talking about like the house points?
Yes. Are Quidditch points equal to house points?
I doubt that because if that was the case, 5 or 10 points wouldn't really amount to anything. Like if you're punished and you lose 5 points. But hey, we're getting all these points just from catching the snitch.
Yeah, so that was my question, that for Gryffindor to move up into second place in the House Cup, if they win that game, wouldn't that depend on the margin of points that were earned in the Quidditch match? Because like if Hufflepuff, who are they? They're versing Slytherin, right?
They are versing Slytherin.
Okay, so like say if Slytherin got 100 points and Gryffindor got 110, I know that's not possible by Quidditch rules, but just go with me. Wouldn't that be a small enough margin that it wouldn't really affect House Cup standings?
I was under the impression that the winner of the Quidditch Cup. No, like at the very end of the year, like
but they award points based on the individual matches, because that's what it says in the beginning of the chapter. It says if Gryffindor won, they would move up into second place in the House Championship. So you're saying that maybe they earn a blanket amount of points for each match that they win. Say, like, you win a Quidditch match, you earn 50 points for the house. And then if you win the Quidditch Cup, you get more. The Quidditch Cup and the House Cup are separate.
Yeah, the House Championship seems like it's the Quidditch Championship. It almost seems like a mistake, and that's supposed to be the Quidditch Championship.
Okay.
My thought
that would make sense. They would move up in the Quidditch tournament. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that I think those are my only two nitpicks. Oh, wait, no, I have another one. So news of Harry being the Gryffindor seeker leaked out somehow in the previous chapter. They literally received a broomstick at breakfast for Harry.
Well, he didn't open it, but it was very much just shaped like a broomstick.
Yes, it's just them being so naive. They're like, how did it leave? Like, maybe don't have your broomstick delivered at breakfast. Okay, that is my last nitpick for these chapters. I got them out of the way at the beginning.
Would that be less shady than if McGonagall called him into his office and he walked out of that office with a broomstick?
I mean, it's shady all around to like gift Harry a broomstick and not say where it's from or where the money came from.
Well, there's definitely a note from McGonagall.
Yes, but like, did McGonagall go? We had this conversation.
Yeah, before. Well, yeah. Ignore
yeah,
it.
Yeah, okay. Let's just move on from the nitpicking. yeah.
So I wanted to look at how Hermione's character is developing a little bit in this chapter. It says Hermione had become a bit more relaxed about breaking rules since Harry and Ron saved her from the mountain troll, and she was much nicer for it.
Yeah.
That was worded.
Yeah.
Poorly.
Yeah.
Like I
the entire last chapter.
Like, I understand the mindset of like, oh, they're having more fun because they're not too worried.
Well, I think it's saying that she's not so uptight all the time, you know, like if they want to go walking out in the halls or something and it's not time to do that, Hermione be like, well, we're gonna get caught, you're gonna get in trouble, why are we doing, whereas, you know, now she's like, oh yeah, you know, let's take a little stroll.
But yeah, I just don't love the idea yeah. that, oh, we like her more because she's like, she's giving up on some of her values.
Yeah, I mean, as we saw in the last episode, I have problems all around with how Hermione is being portrayed early on like this. But I think the general idea is that she's kind of loosening her grip on controlling everything and her just insane adherence to the rules. And I think that might be a bit of a fallback for her character, that when she does feel maybe alone and insecure, that she defaults into this like hall monitor sort of attitude. But now that she has friends, she's learning how to be more comfortable and how to be herself. And we do have to keep in mind too that they're 11 years old and she might not totally know who she is. So she might be kind of growing out of that childhood, like, well, these are the rules.
Mm-hmm. And I could also see these rules being such a comfort for her in this brand new world.
That's a good point.
Like, this is what I read. This is what I studied mm-hmm. over the summer when I was just told randomly, hey, you're a witch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think Hermione's character does develop in this chapter, too, in the Little Blue Flames, which is something that we'll talk about when it gets a spell of the week. But we see the scene of them all sitting outside together. Harry is reading Quidditch Through the Ages, which Hermione lent him. And Hermione is kind of keeping them all warm with her little jar of blue flames, mm-hmm. which I think is just a really nice image. But the Little Blue Flames become like kind of a recurring specialty of Hermione's throughout the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I like that. Although, I have another nitpick here. So they're all sitting outside and Snape sees them and comes over and he takes Quidditch Through the Ages from Harry on the basis that library books are not allowed outside. But, like, two sentences earlier, they say that Hermione lent him the book.
Well, you know how much Hermione loves the library.
Yes, I know.
So Hermione may have taken it out and already been reading it, probably to help Harry. And she said, well, why don't you read it?
Okay, that's fair. It just seemed like Snape was taking Hermione's property.
Potentially,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but also important here is that Snape limps over to them.
Yes, yeah. And we find out more about that when Harry goes and attempts to retrieve Hermione's
yes.
property.
Yes, so Harry goes to the teacher's lounge.
So Harry goes into the teacher's lounge, which right off the bat doesn't seem like a great idea.
No, to just walk in. In fairness, I think he knocked a few times and nobody answered, so he just kind of like barged in.
Is that better?
It sounds like Harry.
it sounds like Harry, but he said, oh, well, it's empty. I might as well go see if
yeah,
my book is
in there. Yeah, I think his plan
there.
Was like, oh, nobody's in there. Maybe my book is just like sitting on the table.
Which I don't know why Snape wouldn't have put 11. It in his office rather yeah. than the teacher's lounge.
Yeah.
But he goes in and sees Snape alone with Filch talking about the wound on his leg.
Yes, he is holding up his robes to show it to Filch, which I wrote down there, is Snape wearing pants under his robes?
Are any of them?
I don't know, because one thing that we've noted a little bit, but that other people have talked about in more detail, is that in the books, it seems like their robes are pulled over their heads and not worn as kind of I don't want to say a bathrobe, but like a bathrobe in the movies where it's open in the front.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in the books, it seems like they pull them over their heads. So if Snape is just like lifting up his robes to show this wound, just the way it didn't specify, lifting up his robes and his pant leg. It was just robes.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely do both yeah. of that with just one hand.
I know, it was
strange. But yeah, to leave out the pants.
Yeah, yeah, but Snape has a pretty grisly wound that he is showing to Filch.
And Harry hears Snape say, how are you supposed to keep your eyes on all three heads at once?
Yes.
Talking about his wound.
Obviously talking about the three-headed dog that we saw at the end of the Midnight Duel chapter.
Yes.
Which I already said was named Fluffy, so.
You ruined.
Ship has sailed.
Although we will find that out by the end of this
yes,
chapter.
Yes, yeah, so it's all good. Yes, yeah, so clearly Snape was bit by Fluffy, and he was conspicuously absent from the whole scene with the troll in the bathroom.
Only running in at the end, yes.
Yes, yeah, so one can conclude that probably happened on Halloween, given that's early November now. So obviously this scene introduces some mystery of how did Snape, well, we can infer how Snape got the cut. It's all but directly stated, but, you know, why Snape was at Fluffy. You know, why was he trying to get past Fluffy? But what I went to is, why are Snape and Filch buddies? Like, why are they confiding in each other in the teacher's lounge?
Yeah, I'm curious if it's, oh, this is the first guy he ran into.
Yeah, or if they're very close friends.
Yeah. From J.K. Rowling's perspective, it might just be these are the two creepiest guys.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. I like to think, too, that Filch just spends a lot of time in the dungeons. And so Snape is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. And they just became friends on that basis. Yeah. They're both also kind of outcasts, I feel like, you know.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Filch much more than Snape.
Well, yeah, but that's for reasons that we later learn. Also, I mean, Filch likes torturing children, and so does Snape. So that's
a good way to get
along.
I'm sure
they bond over that. Yeah.
Yeah. If you have something in common, just roll with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Harry overhears that and then gets caught overhearing it.
Yes.
Snape chases him out of the room, basically.
Yes. Yeah. So Harry sees all this, goes back to the common room, fills Ron and Hermione in, and then has a bad night of sleep because the Quidditch match is the next morning. So the kids start heading down to the Quidditch match, and we've always seen kind of Dean Thomas in the background because he's one of their fellow first year Gryffindors. But this time he is specified as Dean the West Ham fan, West Ham being a soccer team. Mm-hmm. But just, I don't know, somehow saying that, I'm like, we've met Dean before. Like, we know who he is.
I think it's another way to reiterate him being a muggle
Sure. And okay. Never
seeing Quidditch before.
Okay, that's fair. I wanted to talk a little bit about Dean, though, because we never have before. So Dean is always just kind of in the background of the Harry Potter books. He's just, you know, always just like, oh, you know, he's a fellow Gryffindor, but he's just, you know, he's not part of the main crew. Mm-hmm. But
and he's not even the guy that blows up his eyebrows in the movie.
Yes, Seamus. But Dean actually was originally intended to have a much bigger role in the books.
Yeah, wasn't he replaced by Neville?
Kind of. So Rowling said that as she was going through the editing process for Philosopher's Stone, she was looking to cut down some chapters, you know, because it is a children's book, so you can't make it too long, especially the first one. You know, mm-hmm. Later these things are big. But so cutting down it, she started to take out Dean's backstory and add a little bit more about Neville, who Neville becomes a much more major character by the end of the book.
Yeah.
And throughout the series. So Dean's backstory kind of got taken away. His first name was originally Gary. I don't know if it was Gary Thomas, but
I definitely like Dean better.
Yeah, I like Dean better, too. So he was originally more majorly in the Sorting Hat chapter, which he was cut for length in some versions. So apparently, if you got like an early copy of the Philosopher's Stone, Dean might have been mentioned a little bit more in the Sorting Hat chapter.
OK.
He was also supposed to be present at the Midnight Duel. Which is interesting. He was going to be there in addition to Neville, which Neville was also.
Oh, so it was a whole posse.
Yeah, yeah. There was five of them, which the Midnight Duel entirely is cut out of the movie. But Neville is taken out of the scene where they first discover Fluffy. But in the book, Dean was going to be there, too, which I just find interesting. And there's actually a doodle that Rowling did of Dean there with them. All the kids, and she gave him a flat top haircut in case you forgot that it's the 90s. And then his backstory was going to be explored a lot more in Chamber of Secrets because Chamber deals a lot more with like Muggleborns and the politics of blood race in the wizarding world. So he was originally going to have a bigger backstory in Chamber, which I think we can talk about when we get to Chamber because I don't want to get too much into it. But that was cut again for length.
Yeah. So then all of that was more or less thrown on Hermione.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll go into Dean's backstory probably when Hermione starts talking about like the politics again of blood and blood status in Harry Potter. But Dean has an interesting backstory. But yeah, he was supposed to be a lot bigger of a character, which might have helped a lot of the people that have criticized these books for
being very white.
Yes, yeah. And clearly, I don't remember the way that he is described physically, but based on the drawing that she did, she originally did intend him to be black. It wasn't just like a casting decision.
Mm-hmm.
But Dean is a very good artist, which we learn in this chapter. And the kids make a Potter for President banner to hold up at the Quidditch match, which is very sweet.
Adorable. Yeah.
It is very sweet, but I wonder if it says Prime Minister in the UK.
Hmm. I have the Sorcerer's Stone edition, so yeah. That's the American one.
Yes, yeah. It stood out to me. I'm like, does the word president hold much weight for people in the UK? I mean, obviously they know that's the ruler of America.
Yeah, I would believe that it's Potter for President in both versions just because it flows nicely.
Yes, yeah. Potter for Prime Minister versus Potter for President. Yeah, it's just interesting to me. I do wonder what this has to do with athletics, but it is very nice and supporting of them.
Yeah.
And it is said that Harry feels braver looking at it, which I think is nice because Harry, you know, he can't sleep all night because he's so nervous and he feels like he's going to throw up at breakfast and he's nervous stepping out onto a Quidditch pitch. And then he sees their banner up in the corner and just feels braver. He feels more ready to play Quidditch in front of everyone, which I think is a very sweet scene. But I think it also says a lot about Harry's character, that his bravery, his strength is derived from the love and support of his friends.
Yeah.
Which is a recurring theme I think we'll talk about as we do this entire podcast. But it's nice to see it in early form and also in a lower stakes form than, you know, when he's fighting Voldemort.
Yeah. And that definitely could have gone one of two ways. He could have been happy to see it or very embarrassed by it.
He could have been embarrassed by it. He also could have been, oh my God, everybody expects so much out of me. but yeah, I think it's a sweet scene. I also like that all the Gryffindors like turn up for Harry, you know?
Oh yeah.
It's very nice. Quidditch is a nice addition because it adds some levity to the books and it also allows them to be supportive of each other, even if it is in uniting against a common enemy, which is the other house.
Yeah.
But it's nice. So Joe mentioned Rowling narrates the events of the Quidditch match through Lee Jordan. And it's early on, at least, almost entirely through Lee Jordan's dialogue, which is he's narrating the match. He's like the announcer.
Yeah. And he's a friend of the Weasley twins, Fred and George. So he is very biased.
Yes.
He also is a Gryffindor.
Yes.
Plus he's with McGonagall, the Gryffindor team captain. So this seems like a very biased setup, but I love it.
McGonagall is kind of no-nonsense about it. She does get on him whenever he's favoring Gryffindor.
To an extent.
To an extent, yes. It is always with the disclaimer of McGonagall is obsessed with Quidditch. I do wonder how he got that job, because he's friends with Fred and George. He seems to get in trouble a lot with Fred and George. Like, you think that they would pick a more upstanding student.
I don't know if he's actually getting in trouble often, though. It seems like
later in the books, he's kind of involved in their schemes.
He's involved with their schemes, but I don't think he's seeing those repercussions. I feel like Fred and George have him covered.
Sure, maybe. Yeah. I wonder about how Lee Jordan got that job.
I mean, there was probably an interview process. I'm sure there were tryouts at the very least.
Yeah.
And he's just got a great voice.
He does. He does do a very good job of narrating it. Although, and I like that we see this, you know, throughout the books of him and McGonagall kind of butting heads during it. It's in a very playful way.
Yes.
Of Lee Jordan having to like censor his speech. But it's a lot of fun. I really like that. And it's a clever way to do it, because if Rowling was writing about everything that was happening in grammatically correct sentences, it would kind of ruin the pacing of the match. Whereas with Lee Jordan, she can write like, oh, and you know, Katie Bell passes to Alicia Spinnet, intercepted by the, you know, it gets it a little more exciting. It helps the pacing of it.
Yeah. There's a reason there are announcers for sports games.
Yes. Yeah. So I like that she used that to kind of advance her narration.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. I can't believe that people used to listen to sports on the radio. Like, watching sports is mystifying enough to me, but listening to it on the radio, dear God.
And I like to think for a lot of those, they had their own soundboard where it was like, instead of actually hearing magically through the studio doors hitting the ball, somebody's hitting a button and you're hearing the baseball whack. Sound.
Yeah.
And he hits it. It's going far.
Yeah. I can't even imagine just like sitting there listening to a sports match on the radio. But
I mean, but I don't willingly sit down and watch sports match. Yeah.
So the match is playing out. Harry's just kind of circling up above, waiting to get a glimpse of the snitch. That's the strategy that my boyfriend Oliver Wood and him laid out, that he just kind of hang back, let the chasers do their thing until a snitch shows up. They spot it for a moment, and the chasers all hang in midair to watch, which seems like some very poor playing on their part, because none of the other team members are new, it seems like. You know, all of the chasers are, I think they're all in Fred and George's year, so they're a few years older than Harry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just to like stop playing because the seeker is doing something. Just, you know, the game has to keep going. That's the point of Quidditch, you know?
Well, not necessarily. But also, it wasn't just the Gryffindor chasers, it was all the chasers.
Yes, yeah.
So just pretty much the whole action stops. Oh, there's a snitch, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Because if they're going to put all this effort into going back and forth across the field,
uh-huh,
when the game is about to be over in a minute, they'd at least want to watch.
Sure, yeah.
But also, the bludgers are still flying around.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing.
I feel like you wouldn't want to stay still then.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah,
the bludgers are still flying around. If you sit and watch, you're going to get hit.
Yes. Yeah. It was just weird.
Yeah. It just really emphasizes how important the seeker is to the whole game.
Yes.
How important
snitch
is.
Yeah. Yeah. So we find out, too, that the way Quidditch scoring works is that the seeker who catches the snitch earns 150 house points. If, for example,
I thought it was 140.
It's 150.
Okay.
Don't question me. I played a lot of Quidditch World Cup.
I mean, we already covered this entirely.
Did we talk about the scoring? Okay. I'm just saying that, like, theoretically, if the chasers earned enough points, catching the snitch could not matter. So for all of them to just stop in midair, it's weird.
Well, we'll see later in the game. Who was the captain of the Slytherin?
Montague? Yes.
Frederick or something?
It starts with an F.
I feel like it's
Flint.
Flint. No, this is Marcus Flint.
Marcus Flint. Montague. All right. Well, yes. When they do later stop, because things are happening, Flint decides to take it upon himself to just score a couple goals, which it seems like everybody, including the scoreboard, ignores.
What do you mean, including the scoreboard?
I don't think he gets points for them.
Oh, yeah. He's getting those points.
Oh, he is? Oh, okay.
Slytherin only scores once.
Okay.
That whole game until Marcus goes and takes the ball.
Okay.
And then it ends.
It's called
60.
The quaffle. Thank you.
The quaffle is a ball.
Okay. Yeah. And then it ends.
It ends 62.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. But we haven't gotten there quite yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they initially spot the snitch. They end up losing it. And Harry kind of goes back to his little circling strat.
Yeah. He just goes back to basically watching the game. I'm not totally sure where in the timeline this is, but after the game has started, after everyone's sat down.
Yeah.
Do
they
Hagrid,
sit or do they stand?
They're called stands. But I'm going to say they're sitting in the stands.
Okay. I think in the movie they stand.
Well,
but it might also just be like sports. You can sit down or you can stand up and cheer and be excited. But go on.
Yeah. Just feel bad for the person behind you.
Yes.
But yeah. So Hagrid shows up a little late. But he goes and he sits with all the Gryffindor students.
Yeah. He squeezes
which is really
on
cute.
In. He's like, make room for Hagrid.
Yeah.
I love that he sits with the first years, too.
Yeah. I mean, he feels responsible for those first years.
Yeah.
He's taking them.
He takes them across the lake
every year. He's introducing them to the school.
Yeah.
And also, like, he's got a personal relationship with Harry at this point. So he's there with Harry's friends to support him.
Yes,
which is,
I love it. It's so sweet. He's like a supportive uncle.
Yeah. So Harry's broom starts freaking out.
Yes. It starts tossing him around and he's having trouble staying on. And everybody's like, whoa, what the heck? Which, first of all, why doesn't Madame Hooch intervene in this? Because, like, clearly something is wrong. I don't know if she's assuming, like, oh, he's lost control of his broom. That reflects on him as a player. But she apparently is just sitting there watching me like, yeah, it's all good.
Well, it takes pretty much everyone a minute to realize
what's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know what she would do other than, like, go
stop
up there.
The game.
Would you, though?
Well, once they all realize what's happening, Fred and George go up to try to help Harry. They try to pull him onto one of their brooms. And that just makes Harry's broom keep on going up higher. So Fred and George switch their strategy to circling below Harry in case
ready to
he
catch
falls.
Him. Yeah,
yeah, in case, which is sweet of them. But and everybody else is stopped except for Flint, who goes on to score some goals. Like the he's taking advantage of the situation.
But also, like, is he running over to where the ball landed and grabbing it?
I guess.
Like,
it's not,
I don't understand how they get back in play, really.
I don't know. So this is all proceeding. Everybody's just watching in the stands, and it everybody's just like, what do we do?
Yeah, so Hagrid, sitting with the kids, is looking through his binoculars at Harry and lets Hermione borrow them. Mm-hmm. To...
I don't know if he lets Hermione borrow them.
Hermione takes them, but Hagrid doesn't seem to care.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't seem to notice anything other than just focusing on Harry.
Because
I'd like to say he's so
alive.
Caring. He's so focused on, I just have to watch and hope he survives.
Yes. Yeah.
I have to hope he is okay.
Yeah. It is very sweet, like what you're saying, but I don't know if I like this idea or not. Like, I want to say I like the idea, but I don't know. That he doesn't try to do anything. And nobody is doing anything. So I'm not just laying that on Hagrid, but I think Hagrid knows that he is out of his element. And that there are people better suited to take care of Harry. Or maybe he's just so preoccupied in the moment and so worried about what's going on that he's not thinking of, like, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Maybe he's just, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if he's frozen in fear.
Yeah.
Or if he knows, hey, I can't use magic.
Yeah.
There's really nothing right. I can do right here except for watch and hope.
Yeah, yeah. But somebody else decides to act.
Yes. So Hermione takes the binoculars. Mm. And looks at the stands.
11-year-old Hermione takes the binoculars from half-giant Hagrid, who is presumably holding them up to his face.
Yeah, so either these were comically small to Hagrid, or she was holding it on one side and looking through it like a telescope.
No, what I'm saying is that it seems that Hermione may have taken some pointers from Harry in the previous chapter by leaping 12 feet in the air to take the binoculars away from Hagrid.
Yes. Well, if they're sitting down, it's less of a challenge.
That's true. Yeah, Hermione stands on the bleachers to take them from Hagrid, who is sitting. But go on.
So she's skimming through the stands. Mm-hmm. With the binoculars and sees Snape muttering something.
Yeah.
And she knows her expertise.
He's up to no good.
Yeah. He's maintaining eye contact.
Uh-huh.
He is constantly muttering something. He's not blinking.
Mm-hmm.
His mouth keeps moving. He's focused.
Yeah.
So she sets him on fire.
I mean, there's a little bit in between that. She doesn't cast magic across the Quidditch pitch to set Snape on fire.
No, but she says, okay, he's cursing the broom. So she goes to the other side of the Quidditch stadium.
Yeah.
Harry is impressively on this entire time. I don't know how long it takes her to get there.
At one time, he starts like hanging off by his hands when it's getting really dire. But,
yes.
Yeah.
But she gets to him. She bumps over a couple professors as she's going.
Yes.
And sets Snape on fire with her little blue flame.
Yes. I like that not only as Hermione's thought on how to deal with a situation is to set another human on fire, a teacher, let alone, but also that it's kind of revenge for earlier him stealing the library book. I think Hermione is still very upset about the library book.
And I wouldn't blame her.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. What was interesting, though, and made me question how the blue flame works, was she sets it on him for 30 seconds. Hears a scream and realizes it worked and then takes the blue flame back. So I don't know if he's still on fire when she takes the blue flame away and it's just regular fire, or he was burned and now she can take the blue flame away.
That's a good point. I'm not sure. I would think that the fire would stay.
Blue fire still?
I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Would it they spread were, as
before they were
fire.
Keeping it in a jar? I don't know if we clarified that.
So yes. So
she
it back up into her jar.
Yeah. I imagine that the flame can spread, given that she would want to keep it in the jar. I'm not sure if it would spread as regular fire or as the little blue flames. I'm not sure.
Honestly, I have no idea.
They also cut this out of the movie, so we don't have any kind of imagery. Not that we should go by the movie, but...
Yeah, in the movie, she just sets him up.
Yeah, there's no little blue flame.
Which is very disappointing.
It is.
Because I would love to know more about this little blue flame.
Yeah.
We'll get into it when we get the spell of the week, but yeah. There is not a lot of detail because Hermione is the only one that we know about.
Yeah.
Having used it.
Which is also interesting that 11-year-old Hermione, like, discovers the spell and masters it.
Or it's just... that someone else used it previously and J.K. Rowling doesn't care.
Yeah, maybe.
Two very plausible options.
Yes. Yes. So Snape realizes that he's on fire or he's burned or something. It makes him break eye contact. And Harry, not to say his broom recovers because it seems like there's still a lingering effect. You know, like it takes time between the eye contact breaking and the broom normalizing.
Well, the way it's written, it seems like here's this one scene and then we're switching over to the to another scene happening.
Yeah,
at the same
it's
time.
A little hard to represent it simultaneously.
Yeah. So Hermione's under the bleachers.
Yes.
And doesn't see exactly what's happening. She heard the yelp. She knows that
she doesn't want to be caught setting a teacher on fire.
Understandably so. And then she leaves. And then I believe we get Ron's perspective.
That's possible.
Seeing Harry regain control.
Yes.
And we can see that what Hermione did work.
Yes. Yeah. So Harry gets back on the broom. He starts heading towards the ground, which everybody assumes that he's going to be sick. And then he throws up the golden snitch.
Yes. So he caught it with his mouth. During the struggle or after he regained control, he...
How do you feel about this?
Swallowed it.
He didn't swallow it. It was in his mouth.
He has to cough it up.
Yeah.
If it's just right, like if it's just sitting on top of your tongue, you don't have to cough it up.
Imagine if Harry choked on the golden snitch and died.
We're not putting that in the podcast.
How do you feel about this?
I appreciate the way the movie did it, actually.
I think that's what I was going to say, actually. I think it in the movie, it's kind of a goofy, like... I don't know. Maybe I'm going into this with the expectation of I know what happens. So like when Harry's flying to the ground looking like he's going to be sick, I'm thinking like, oh, it's because the snitch is in his mouth. Not, oh, he's going to vomit because he was just tossed all over the Quidditch pitch by his crazy broom. But yeah, I think that the movie represented it really well. Like I think it works more in the movie than it does in the book.
Yeah. In the book, it seems like he regained control of his broom and went straight to the ground with the snitch already in his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
So... in a way, that does seem very impressive. Through his struggling, he managed to grab the snitch however he could while dangling by his arms.
Yeah, but in the movie, it seems more like it's a surprise to him even.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think he intentionally caught it with his mouth?
I don't know.
These are the lengths that my boyfriend Oliver Wood pushes his Quidditch team to go to catch the snitch. At whatever cost, be it your life. Yeah, it's bizarre. I mean, I like it. It's a children's book again.
Yeah, I appreciate it. It's just it raises more questions than it answers.
Yes. Yeah, it is a little weird. When you think about it for more than 30 seconds, some of it starts to come apart at the seams. But Harry lands safely. They win the Quidditch Cup. It's a victory.
Well, they win that Quidditch game.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't want to open up that discussion again. Yeah, so they win the Quidditch match.
But speaking of coming apart at the seams, they start talking to Hagrid after the game.
Yes.
Who they interrogate.
Yes.
And Hagrid is bad at lying to children.
Yes.
Which some could say
it's
is
a respectable trait.
Yeah, a good trait.
Yeah, so they start saying, like, Snape was doing it. Snape was cursing Harry's broom. Hagrid's like, that's ridiculous. He's a teacher. And they talk about the three-headed dog, and Hagrid reveals that the three-headed dog is indeed named Fluffy and belongs to him.
Used to be his pet.
Yes.
Got it from someone at a pub.
I think he specifies a Greek chappy.
Yes.
Not to be confused with Chappy, the movie. Just a Greek man.
I think it's spelled differently.
Here, I don't think so. Out. I'm pretty sure it's Chappy.
Well, either way, we're not talking about Chappy.
I would. Our next podcast is going to be about Chappy, so get ready.
That's going to be one podcast.
I think that episode. I could make a Chappy podcast very long if I tried to dissect all that happens in that movie.
It would take eight just to understand what happened, and then the rest of it could be going into detail. Bottom off a Greek Chappy. Yep.
Yep.
Spelled the same.
It's Chappy.
C-H-A-P-P-I-E.
Chappy makes a guest appearance in this chapter of Harry Potter. He's raising three-headed dogs in Greece. Yeah, and then Hagrid lets slip that, first of all, Fluffy is guarding something, which I guess they knew because there was the trapdoor.
Yeah, that was already a guess.
Fluffy is guarding something, and it's between Dumbledore and Nicholas Flamel.
Maybe by next chapter we'll have some more information about this brand new mysterious character.
Well, we mentioned before.
But
we'll learn more about him later.
Yeah, so maybe we won't emphasize that.
I mean, it already happened.
It already happened.
Intrepid readers will notice that, as Galadriel calls them HP sleuths.
Okay.
Her sleuthoscope is going off.
I like that that's not even like a paperback book. It's like a workbook. It looks like a school workbook that you would rip pages out of and complete.
That's what 10-year-old me walked into a bookstore and said, I need this.
I believe that.
Go see Chappy out on DVD and Blu-ray.
Is that how we're ending this?
I mean, we still have to do Spell of the Week.
Okay, I'd love to see how this comes out when you piece it together.
Well, I'm the one that has all the control of the editing, so...
Yeah, so it's mostly going to be
Chappy. I could have been editing Chappy references into every single episode of this podcast.
I've listened to some, and
some. All right, so now it's time for Spell of the Week. Maybe I'll remember to put the sound effect in this one.
Have you not been?
It was there the first time we did it.
And that's it.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. It's like a little magic sound.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so should I still be saying, and Spell of the Week?
You can if you want, I guess. Week. I mean, I can add that in post.
No. I don't know. What do you think of this picture?
That's Hermione. Yes, I've seen that picture. I guess that didn't answer your question.
I was going to say, like, that wasn't my question. I didn't say, who is the curly-haired child in this picture?
It is a problem with Hermione that I think a lot of people interpret her bushy hair as curly hair. So I don't necessarily like the way her hair is portrayed in that picture. I don't think it's big enough.
Okay.
I like to imagine that Hermione has hair like Abby from Giant Bomb, except longer.
Well, I don't know, even though longer, but she's smaller at this point. So it's like,
I think it's long.
It's a lot more.
Yeah.
In comparison to
yeah,
her.
Yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that picture?
I don't know.
It's just so hard because we have like such a set idea of what these characters look like.
But even ignoring the movies.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't love it.
Honestly, more than anything else, I don't love how the blue flame looks.
Okay. All right, can you do Spell of the Week, please?
So our Spell of the Week, as we alluded to earlier, is Hermione's Blue Flames.
It doesn't have a name.
Yeah, it's also known as Cold Fire or Bluebell Flames.
Yes.
I had not heard Bluebell Flames.
I feel like that's more of what I heard, but that might be from spending time on AccioBrain.LigerMagic.com.
What year was this? What decade?
2008?
Okay. I don't know how to move on from that.
Bluebell Flames.
Bluebell Flames. So we don't know the incantation of this charm.
Yeah.
We never hear it cast.
It's just kind of like, oh, Hermione has her flames.
Yeah. She does conjure them. She doesn't just have
They're not like hanging out
a
in her
bunch
pocket.
Of jars in her robes at all times. The Harry Potter Wiki states that it's produced by a charm flowing from the caster's wand in a stream or jet, which then condenses into a body of fire on a nearby object.
Okay.
This is like the Incendio charm, which is just set this on fire.
Yeah. Maybe it's Blucendio.
Oh,
you can keep going. There's nothing stopping you.
I guess.
Just move past it.
I guess. But unlike Incendio, not only is it blue, but you can touch the flames.
Why does it hurt Snape?
So the logic behind this is interesting. I'm not sure if it's just the caster, but Hermione is able to pick up the flames with her bare hands without getting burned at all.
Okay, true. Yes.
And keep it in a jar in her coat, still without getting burned. But placing it on something, you're able to get heat from it. They're able to warm up.
So maybe that's
from that fire.
That is, it's spreading as regular fire, because regular fire would burn Snape. Alternatively, maybe it's just the smoke.
Just the smoke is like startling Snape.
Does it say that Snape like was burned and started freaking out? I can't remember. But I'm saying that not even just him seeing smoke and getting upset, but the smoke might break his eye contact. You know, because when you're like standing near a fire and the smoke blows in your eyes, you usually close your eyes because it stings.
Yeah, but I think the smoke would be right behind him. Like, she's setting his robes on fire from behind.
Yeah,
it just says his eye contact.
That it takes time for Snape to realize that he's on fire.
So he is on fire in one way or another.
Yeah, it's
unclear. Whether it's that flame burning him or that flame catching his robes on fire.
Yeah.
So the wiki also states that the flame radiates heat only to objects directly above it.
Okay.
So maybe if she was below him with that flame, though, I believe she put it directly onto his robe.
Yeah. So we're not totally sure what's happening here, but it works is what matters.
It works and it's cool. And I would love a little blue flame to keep in my pocket.
Yes. And there is also some very good fan art of Hermione with her little blue flames on acciobrain.ligermagic.com.
Liger magic?
Liger magic, like...
Lion tiger.
Yes. So that wraps up Spell of the Week and I guess our podcast. So you can subscribe to us on all major podcast services. I'm going to try to get us on Spotify soon because they just changed how you submit to Spotify and it's a lot easier now. And so you can subscribe to us there. You can go to our website, which is podtrificustotalis.com. I'm not going to spell it this time. You can figure it out on your own or you can just try to Google it and it'll probably autocorrect you. So on our website, you can get links to subscribe to our podcast, you can get detailed show notes, and you can send us an email. You can also just send us an email directly at owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. That's owl, like the bird, post, like the
post
mail
office.
Yeah, like post office. owlpost@podtrificustotalis.com. We'd love to hear from people. It'd be great if we had some emails to read right now. Let us know about your experiences with the Harry Potter books. If we said something that you disagree with or that you want to expand upon or that you want to correct, you can do that via email or you can just interact with us via social media. We're on Twitter as @podtrificus. And honestly, that's what I check most of the time. So just use Twitter. It's easier. but we also have a Facebook page and a Tumblr page and probably some other stuff I forgot about. Oh, and a YouTube page if you listen to podcasts on YouTube, which don't do that, but you can.
There are so many better options.
Yes. Yeah.
If you want
download an app.
if you want to listen to it and have your phone screen off at the same time,
there are these literally anything podcatchers else that you can download.
Podcatchers?
Yes. Yeah, that's what they're called, podcatchers. Most people just say podcast app now, but
yeah, that makes more sense.
Okay. Yes. So basically just go to our website. There's a lot of good stuff on there. And please, you know, interact with us, Twitter, email, anything like that. We love to hear from people, even though it probably won't be on an episode for a while because we're pre-recording these. But yes, thank you for listening. And we will see you again for chapter 12.
The Mirror of Erised.